And actually, all the things that they're saying about there with relationship is a really good tie-in to our topic today. If you'd like to follow along today, you can follow along in the message notes as we pick up the second installment, I guess, in some of the story of David. And so as we do, I need you to imagine that we are back in the Valley of Elah. Now, last week we looked at that story, that epic battle that happened in the valley between the Philistines with, who was their warrior? Goliath. And the Israelites and their unusual hero. Who is that? David. And so this 15-year-old-ish shepherd boy has taken down Goliath. Roar! And the Israelites have had this unexpected huge victory. And David, who up until this time was a shepherd and an occasional musician in Saul's court, now is right at the center of the public eye, public attention. King Saul wants to get to know him and his family better. And so as David is introduced to Saul on a whole new level, now as a conquering hero, David would end up meeting somebody that will shape the rest of his life. And it becomes one of the most famous, I guess, friendships in the Bible. So today we're going to take a look at David and Jonathan. And as we do, I didn't expect coming into a sermon on friendship that there'd be some elements of it that are perhaps a little bit controversial. So, isn't that fun? I'm going to at least poke at least a couple of things that you may disagree with, but I want to just, you know, ready you for that. One that's probably more more minor controversial statement, and one that is perhaps a little more significant. But the story of David and Jonathan has a lot to teach us about friendship and the nature of friendship and the challenges of friendship. And here's the first controversial statement. I believe... that the skills of friendship, the skills of forming friendship, are today becoming increasingly rare. That it's harder now to make friends than it, or at least to make, I'm going to call them real friends or true friends, like those really deep friendships. I believe it is harder now than it was 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago. I think we have some challenges now that make pursuing and deepening those friendships more difficult. And one of the leading factors in that, this is a controversial statement, is our technology. Do you have your phone? Will you pull out your phone? Isn't it interesting that like 30 years ago, our phones were on a leash and we were free? Now our phones are off the leash and we're leashed to the phone. Do you have your phone? Isn't it also interesting that, now this may not be true for everybody, but tell me if this is true, especially if you are under 50. It's hard to remember the last time you talked on your phone. It's hard to remember the last time you talked, which is kind of ironic, isn't it? Hey, tell me about your phone. It's a great phone. It has a wonderful camera. Can you imagine what that would sound like to somebody, like somebody teleported from 50 years ago to today? Tell me about your phone. My phone has a great camera. It's fantastic. But we rarely, and this is maybe an assumption, but we, or more rarely, use it to actually talk to people, to telephonate, like phonetics, the sound of a voice over radio waves or over a line. Telephone. Isn't that weird? But our technology, our telephones, have enabled us to become more connected to more people than ever before. Isn't that true? I mean, you have the ability to express yourself on a level that previous generations would find mind-boggling. From your telephone, you can make a video that millions, if not tens or hundreds of millions of people will see. You can put a post that many, 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 many people will see. Maybe even a billion people could see from your little telephone. Isn't that incredible? We are more connected to more people, but the downside of that is that we are also, though more connected to more people, it tends to be more shallow, doesn't it? And so we find ourselves often more lonely. It's so easy to connect with so many that, and if you're like me, there's times you just feel just overwhelmed with all of the input, all of the notifications, all of the everything that by putting our focus on everybody, it is harder to focus on anybody. Do you agree? Yes, no? But I think it's getting increasingly difficult. And let's do a little get to know each other show of hands game. Who here in the last year would say that I have lost a friend over a Facebook post or any social media post? Put some hands up. Okay. Well, that's good. Way to go, guys. Or how about this? This is something we could only do with modern technology. Have you ever had a time where you have been ghosted? Do you know what ghosting is? Okay, ghosting is when you're trying to communicate with somebody and you know that they got their message, like an iMessage, you can see when somebody's read it. That's why I don't like iMessage very much. Or Facebook Messenger, you can see that they have seen the message, but you never hear anything back ever, no matter how many times you post, no matter how many, like it's as if you are a ghost. You've been ghosted. Who's had an experience of that? Yeah, a bunch of us. It's becoming increasingly common, and yet it is absolutely unique to this incredible technology that has us more connected to more people, but sadly, often in ways that are more shallow and ways that are more lonely. And so on some level, I believe all of us we're hungry for those really significant friendships, those really significant relationships. And now maybe you already have some of those. If you do, I hope this morning will be a time of just giving thanks to God for those relationships and thinking about how you can continue to invest in those things. One of our goals here for you at Columbia Grove, if you're getting connected to the church, is to create environments where friendships can form so that, because here's one, you've probably heard me say this phrase before if you've been around at Columbia Grove for a while. Our goal for you is that you would have at least two Christian friends that you could call at 2 o'clock in the morning and not need to apologize for it. Now, some of you, you have those friends right now and you're grateful for them. You can point to them. That's wonderful. You're sitting next to them, give them a little plug. Yeah, that's great. And that's something we're trying to foster. But at times, it can be really difficult. It can be really difficult to go that next step in our relationships and in our friendships. And I think there's even some misconceptions about relationships and friendships that make it harder, in addition to the challenges of modern technology. So there's going to be a couple of insights, I think, that we can especially gain from David and Jonathan's friendship. But first, we need to tackle the part of the friendship that is especially controversial. You ready? Okay. Because we're going to read just a highlight of some of the passages of David and Jonathan's interactions. Now, as we read these passages, I want you to imagine that these are the only passages you've read about David and Jonathan's story. Now, if you've read more, you know a bit more about David's story, you know what's going to be coming up in a couple weeks in terms of how his story ends and some of the sins of his later life. You'll maybe see some of these passages in a different light. But if you just read these passages of David and Jonathan's friendship and their interactions, I want you to tell me what you would think. Okay, starting with 1 Samuel chapter 18, verses 1 through 4. This is some of David and Jonathan's first interaction. This is right after David has killed Goliath and Saul is paying attention. He's introduced to Jonathan. And after David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David and loved him as himself. From that day, Saul kept David with him and would not let him return home to his family. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David along with his tunic, even his sword, his bow, and his belt. I should point out something about Jonathan that I neglected to say earlier that's really helpful to know. Jonathan is Saul's oldest son, so you could even think of him as Prince Jonathan. He was the one that would be kind of heir apparent to the kingdom. So when Saul dies, it would be naturally assumed that the kingdom would move on to Jonathan. And yet, as Saul distanced himself from God, as Saul compromised in his obedience, the Spirit of God left Saul, and Samuel anointed David, even as this teenager, to one day be king. So he and David and Jonathan, they meet, and Jonathan takes off the robe that he was wearing, the royal robe that he was wearing, gave it to David along with his tunic, even his sword and his bow and his belt. And then we're going to jump forward to 1 Samuel chapter 20, verses 41 and 42. This is one of the last interactions, or last lengthy interactions, between David and Jonathan. And this is right after Jonathan has confirmed that Saul is trying to kill David, and the word has gotten back to David. After the boy was gone, David got up from the south side of the stone, and he bowed down before Jonathan three times with his face to the ground. Then they kissed each other and wept together. But David wept the most. Jonathan said to David, "Go in peace, for we have sworn friendship to each other in the name of the Lord, saying, 'The Lord is the witness between you and me and between your descendants and my descendants forever.'" Then David left, and Jonathan went back to town. So if that was all that you heard about David and Jonathan's story, what's an assumption you might make about David and Jonathan? Would you say, "Huh, are they gay? They seem awfully affectionate. Are they gay?" It's interesting. If you were to read commentaries from the last like 15, 20 years, like that question just kept coming up again and again and again and again, because David and Jonathan were very affectionate with each other. I mean, there's some kissing going on. There's dudes kissing in the Bible. I don't know how I feel about that, unless you've ever made yourself familiar with Middle Eastern culture, where a casual, the kiss of friendship would be absolutely common. Is this common in Eastern Europe now, or in the Middle East still today? So it's important to remember that acts of affection, same sex acts of affection, in this context, are never considered sexual. But sometimes people make that assumption. And I want to rid us of that assumption and help us to see that even the fact that we would hear that today reveals something about our hearts and about our culture. When we read it in that kind of a light, what we're taking in is what we could think of as cultural bias, as we read the Bible through the lens of our own experience now. And the way that our culture works now, we would read here's the other controversial statement, our North American hyper-sexualized culture into the Bible, and start assuming all these different kind of things about friendship. And, the church has at times perhaps participated in that, in that reaction to the hyper-sexualized culture around us. At times, the church has gotten homophobic. And so here's, two young boys, and they're holding hands, or they're hugging one another, and you're like, "Oh, boy, we don't do that." I mean, we live in an age where kids that are like in third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, just young children, will at times feel some pressure to like identify. So are you straight? Are you gay? Are you trans? Are you non-binary? And they're like, "I just want my Legos, man." We're putting all this pressure on kids, I think often unintentionally, but all this pressure on kids in this hyper-sexualized culture. But this passage teaches us something that is important to know about friendship, and it's this: friendship is affectionate. Friendship is affectionate. And that it's good, it's okay to be affectionate in appropriate, non-sexual ways with your friends, especially your same-sex friends. It's good. And so if you find yourself, longing for a hug, that doesn't mean that there's something weird going on. It just means that you're human. We were designed, we were created for affection. So one of the things, at least I lament as we read these passages of David and Jonathan and the close, like the just dear, innocent, affectionate friendship they had, is how much sometimes in our hypersexualized culture, we just shy away from just the honest, appropriate, affectionate interactions with one another. We were created for affection. And affection is good. Affection is good. Friendship is affectionate. But let's dive a little bit deeper. And I want to look at a more extended passage. This time we're going to look at 1 Samuel chapter 20. So if you've got your Bibles open, or you opened up your Bible apps, or you actually are following along in the message notes, you can find them there. 1 Samuel chapter 20, we're going to read verses 1 through 17. And I want you to notice what's going on in the relationship between David and Jonathan. So this is after David has been part of Saul's court for some time. And Saul is getting increasingly jealous of David. David is getting a lot of attention. David is getting a lot of notoriety. Saul is getting less notoriety because he was supposed to sort of fight the battle with Goliath, but he didn't, and David... Anyway, so people are paying attention to David, not Saul. Saul's getting jealous. He's starting to lose it. And so David needs to have a very hard conversation with Jonathan to clear up a misconception. So 1 Samuel chapter 20, verses 1 through 17. Then David fled from Naomoth at Ramah and went to Jonathan and asked, "What have I done? What is my crime? How have I wronged your father that he is trying to kill me?" "Never," Jonathan replied. "You are not going to die. Look, my father doesn't do anything great or small without letting me know. Why would he hide this from me? It isn't so." So David's saying to Jonathan, "Your dad's put a hit out on me." Jonathan's like, not so. Okay, so David took an oath and he said, "Your father knows very well that I found favor in your eyes. And he has said to himself, 'Jonathan must not know this or he will be grieved.' Yet as surely as the Lord lives, and as you live, there's only a step between me and death." Jonathan said to David, "Whatever you want me to do, I'll do for you." So David said, "Look, tomorrow is the new moon feast, and I'm supposed to dine with the king, but let me go and hide in the field until the evening of the day after tomorrow. If your father misses me at all, tell him, 'David earnestly asked my permission to hurry to Bethlehem, his hometown, because an annual sacrifice is being made there for his whole clan.' If he says, 'Very well,' then your servant is safe. But if he loses his temper, then you can be sure that he's determined to harm me. As for you, show kindness to your servant, for you've brought him into a covenant with you before the Lord. And if I'm guilty, then kill me yourself. Why hand me over to your father?" "Never," Jonathan said. "If I had the least inkling that my father was determined to harm you, wouldn't I tell you?" And David asked, "Who will tell me if your father answers you harshly?" "Come," Jonathan said, "let's go out into the field." And so they went out there together. Then Jonathan said to David, "I swear by the Lord, the God of Israel, that I will surely sound out my father by this time the day after tomorrow. If he's favorably disposed towards you, will I not send word and let you know? But if my father intends to harm you, may the Lord deal with Jonathan, be it ever so severely. If I do not let you know and send you away in peace, may the Lord be with you as he's been with my father. But show me unfailing kindness like the Lord's kindness as long as I live, so that I may not be killed. And do not ever cut off your kindness from my family, not even when the Lord has cut off every one of David's enemies from the face of the earth." So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "May the Lord call David's enemies to account." And Jonathan had David reaffirm his oath out of love for him, because he loved him as he loved himself. So David is concerned that Saul is out to get him. So he has a hard conversation with Jonathan, a hard conversation. And they work to try to clear these things up. They reaffirm their affections for one another and their intentions for one another. One of the ideas that we get out of this that I want us to spend just a little bit of time with is just simply the idea that real friendships require real commitment. One of the challenges of being connected to lots and lots and lots of people is it's also very, very easy to disconnect, isn't it? But friendship, real friendship, asks that we seek to be the friends to the people around us like we are hoping they would be friends to us. And I would dare say, because, I mean, this is an area in my life where I struggle sometimes. It's difficult. I think it's pretty common with middle-aged, I hate using that term, but middle-aged guys, you know, it's easy to get disconnected. It's easy to be so into our work and into our families, and it's hard to just get buddy-buddy time. It doesn't seem like a priority until you realize how disconnected you can be. But real friendship requires real commitment. It requires at times being the one who initiates. It requires at times the one who pursues the other. It requires sometimes putting our own pride aside. It requires at times being vulnerable, and that's hard. But I want to urge you to pursue that and urge you to seek God today for how he's calling you to take those steps forward in friendship, remembering that real friendship requires real commitment. Be willing to be the one who will go first. You know, all friendships start off with that sense of connection. You know, and so we can get into the trap, I suppose, of thinking that just because we know the friendships often look kind of like romantic relationships. They start off with a spark that is just going to continue on kind of just by the spark. That it doesn't require real commitment. But all relationships, marriage relationships, and our friendships, they begin with connection, but they continue with commitment, don't they? So as we look to apply this to our lives today, who are you thankful for? Who are you thankful for? Who are the people in your life who have been there with you and for you? People you've journeyed with over time. And as we spend some time in prayer in a moment, I'm going to invite you just to even in prayer, just to thank God for some of those people. And maybe God will even lay it on your heart to call somebody up. Take somebody to coffee. Send them a card. Make camping plans to do something. Who are the people that you are thankful for? You know, I think of some of the people in my life, the friendships within the church that I've pursued and nurtured over the years, some incredible people that I know I wouldn't have survived the challenges in my life and career and family and all those kind of things without their support and love. Also, even there's some collegial friendships, some pastors, and there's another pastor in town that you ask Anita, because she long knows, if something happens to me, she knows who's going to do my funeral. But who are the people you're thankful for? Who are the people that God is calling you to invest in? David and Jonathan are a good example of friendship, but there's an even better example of friendship in the Bible. You could think of him as the ultimate friend, right? It's Jesus. In fact, in John chapter 15, verse 13, he would say this, "Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends." Jesus is the ultimate example of friendship, one who put the needs of others ahead of himself, the needs of you and me and us, that he would lay down his life. He loves you that much. Do you know that? Do you believe that? And so as we think of the people in our life that we're grateful for, and as we spend some time in prayer, as we ask God to show us the people he's calling us to invest in, remember that those true friendships, those deeper friendships, they come out of our relationship ultimately with Jesus. He's the ultimate example of what true friendship looks like.